live from the Veterans Radio Studio on the Ave Maria Network. This is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host for today's program, Dale Throneberry.
And good morning, America. How are you? And welcome to Veterans Radio. We're very excited to have you here with us, coming to you live from the Veterans Radio Studio at Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and on the Internet around the world at veteransradio.net. Joining me in the studio this morning or right now is 101st Airborne and 1st Division, Bob Gould.
And that's right. We are the B team today. We're the B team.
That's true.
The A team is out gathering.
Info.
He should be back shortly. He's gathering.
Recon.
We sent him out past the perimeter wire.
That's right. We've got a really exciting program.
Maybe he'll get shot at.
If he doesn't get shot at by us, you never know.
Might scare the pants off him, you know what I mean?
That's true.
But he's on recon, folks, and yes. We're the B team, and the A team will be here shortly.
And the reason that we're kind of delaying here is that our guest on the program today is a Major Bill Willoughby from Ohio, and he's going to be talking to us about his experiences in Vietnam in, I don't know the exact year, but I believe it was 1967, 68.
But what a huge importance when I met Major Willoughby down at the Welcome Home Rally on the 21st of May. He is the final say-so to get in
right.
West Point. Listen to this, folks. The final, you want to know, who do I go to get my kid in? This is the guy. Is it only for Ohio or is it for all West Point?
I don't know.
I think it's all of West Point. It's regional. You're right.
It's a regional thing. And anyway, Major Willoughby is an interesting guy, and I think you're going to really like his story. He was Special Forces in Vietnam. He was wounded, was medically discharged, permanent disability. But he's continued working with the military, and as Bob pointed out right there, he is the final say for West Point appointees in northeastern Ohio.
If you want to know who that person is, it might even be Michigan. It might be the whole region out there, the whole eastern seaboard. But he's the guy. You know, it's something else I want to point out, Dale, in doing this program for all the years that we've been doing this program and all the programs that we've accomplished. It just amazes me when I look at these guys with their civilian clothes on, which we did a couple weeks ago, and you think, did they really do all that?
Well, I think that's what's so interesting.
They just blend in, you know. They,
you know, you can't, the thing is, you know, you can't tell a veteran from anybody else.
You cannot.
In most cases. And it is very interesting to see all of us in our civilian clothes. And then you go back and you look at those pictures of us 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago now, 60 years ago for our World War II guys. And it's amazing what they're just young boys.
I looked at him, and he just looked like a preacher that was out shopping at Kmart. And here he's going to have this fantastic story to tell. By the way, folks, you can go to the archives and get our May 21st program and listen to Major Willoughby at that point recollecting his exploits in Vietnam. So, but this will be an adjunct to that.
Right.
What we're going to do
today.
This
is a little bit more in depth when it comes.
More in depth.
Speaking of May 21st and down at U.S. Wings, we want to talk about U.S. Wings today.
Oh yeah.
Because they've been a great sponsor for us recently, and we're very excited with the opportunity that we had down there to meet all the great people around the Hudson, Ohio, and especially the members of the VVA 717 chapter. Just great guys.
You know, those guys were great. They came in their dress uniforms. Their boots were spit-shined. Everything. And we're on the radio. Nobody could see them, right? But we could. And it was the attitude. So when you hear them come in and shout, and really get on there and command to come in and do the presentation of the colors. Wow.
Well, yes. And that, of course, was sponsored by U.S. Wings and Sergeant Hack. And we want to talk a little bit about U.S. Wings because we're really encouraging folks to get down there, if you live in northeastern Ohio, to get down to U.S. Wings in Hudson or to go on their website, which is uswings.com, and just check out their merchandise. You want to talk about high-quality merchandise for veterans, for anybody that's interested in military apparel. And I know, Bob, you were anxiously wanted to talk about some shirts you picked up.
Well, I picked up their summer collection. I bought three of their summer collection shirts. and they're cotton. It's really, cotton's hard to take care of because you got iron in it. Not this particular cotton. So you just wash it and hang it up, and there you go, and it's good to go. So you can go online and see that they even have minutiae. They have a P-38. You can get, where else are you going to get a P-38?
But there are civilians out there, that's a can opener. That's a little handheld thing. It's about an inch and a half long.
Well, long.
And it will open anything.
It came in with every C ration, came in with every daily when we got the little box. There was the P-38.
I wonder, does the P-38 come with the MREs?
No, I don't think you need them. Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't think you would need it anymore.
No,
but
no, there's no cans to open. They don't use cans. No, they don't use cans.
All this great modern technology.
But getting back to U.S. Wings, if you happen to be on Highway 80, right? That's what that's called. That's the Turnpike.
Yeah, the Ohio Turnpike. Exit 180.
Exit 180. It couldn't get any easier to remember. And just go off about a quarter of a mile right there at the exit. Hines Hill Road, East Hines Hill Road, a quarter of a mile off the turnpike. They'd love to see you. It's always a welcome. The welcome sign is always, we'll leave the light on for you. Well, they do down there at U.S. Wing. Sarge is talking, he says, well, we don't sell a whole lot of leather coats during the summertime. But if you're looking for the gift for Dad, why wait? We had Father's Day.
That's right, and we would all love those incredible leather jackets.
Are you going to get a Top Gun? We're not talking about a replica. He actually gets the patterns. He gets the patterns from the government, and that Top Gun, that's a beautiful jacket. Oh, man. Folks, you got to go online and check that
this
out.
This is U.S. Wings. You can either go online at uswings.com, or you can give them a call at 800-650-0659, and they have got great people to talk to, and they'll point you in the right direction. And you wanted to talk about your shirt.
I wanted to talk about the shirts, so I do recommend that you check out those, Hawaiian shirts, Florida shirts, what do they call, flower shirts?
I don't know.
They're wonderful. You wear them out, you don't tuck them in. They're very comfortable, they're very easy to take care of. But I do want to point out that when you do go online and you start looking at all the stuff at U.S. Wings, you can go through every one of the tabs. Mm-hmm. And they have a B-17 jacket, the jacket, complete with the sheepskin underneath, leather. I mean, if you wanted to buy something for that grandfather, uncle, or dad that would just bug their eyes out, you could give them that B-17 jacket. They'd wear it even in August. You know what? Because it's just so beautiful. You don't want to take it off. It's really something to see. So that's uswings.com.
Don't miss it. Hudson, Ohio.
uswings.com, yeah.
I think it's a great thing. And speaking of the Army and so forth. Oh, by the way, if you're listening to Veterans Radio and you want to give us a call during the program today, you can do that by calling us at 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. I think it's a great opportunity for you to talk about it. And there's one thing that we do need, a couple of things we need to talk about today. But first of all, and Matt, I think he's probably ready for this, so we need to talk about a birthday.
Oh, there it is.
June 14th.
When did they write this? Caissons go rolling along.
Oh, I don't know. Well, somebody will give us a call and let us know when this thing is
written. Because caissons, weren't they in the Civil War? You had a caisson with every cannon in the back. So that was then, probably during the Revolutionary. Did they write this? Is this revolutionary music?
I have no idea, but we do want to wish happy birthday to the United States Army, June 14th, 1775. Prior to that date, there was not an official army. General Washington didn't have an army to command. It was just a group of different... Each state had their own militia and their own army. And it said that on the 14th of June in 1775, Congress allocated $2 million. Where the heck did they come up with $2 million in those days?
You mentioned know what it. They did? They taxed liquor.
Oh, that's...
They did. And they taxed it, not when you bought it, but when you made it. Everybody made their own liquor. They made their own wine. They made their own mead.
Well, no wonder they were upset.
Yes.
That was a whiskey rebellion afterwards, right?
But look how they raised money. They didn't raise money by taxing corn or lobsters or whatever. They taxed liquor.
Anyway, it was John Adams that requested from Congress that they adopt the Boston troops to make it a full United States Army, to draft the rules and so forth, and they voted $2 million to support the forces around Boston and those at New York Moreover, Congress authorized the formation of 10 companies of expert riflemen from Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Virginia, and they were directed to march to Boston to support the New England militia. George Washington received his appointment as commander-in-chief on the 15th of June, 1775.
Well, who appointed him?
Continental Congress.
So they got how many members were in the Continental Congress? I don't know. We should know that.
Well,
100 or...
No, I think it was probably somewhere around 30. I think each colony sent two representatives to the Continental Congress. And what were there, 13 colonies originally? And we go forward from there.
Don't tread on me.
Anyway, happy birthday, United States Army. And we're really happy that he did that, considering that both of us were in the Army a few years after that.
I love the Army. I wish I could go back. Wouldn't you like to spend a couple of weeks back in the Army?
As long as I didn't have to do those pull-ups all the time.
How many could you do?
Well, you know, remember when you ran across a country area, they had those ladders, and you had to go across the company area on the ladders.
Oh, that was hard. Ooh.
Everybody had blisters, you know, open blisters on your palms of your hands. For 8 weeks.
No, we had
very simple.
We had the pull-up bar right at the mess hall. So
we had to do that.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. On your way in, you did pull-ups.
Well, once I finally lost the weight. The other thing we want to talk about real quickly here is the traveling wall. The Vietnam Wall is going to be in Canton, Michigan this weekend. And for those of you in the local area that wanted to see, it's a replica of the Vietnam Wall from Washington, D.C. It's about 8 feet tall. It's got the 58,000 names on it. And it is in Canton, Michigan. You can't miss it. It's at Independence Park over there, and you should be able to find that. So for all of you in the local Ann Arbor, Wayne County area, get on over to it's Independence Park, I believe, or Heritage Park, sorry, and you'll be able to check out the wall. So you'll be able to find it. So anyway, that was for the
where's that going to be again?
It's going to be at Heritage Park. It's there today. It was there yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Do they cover it at night?
They have guards that watch it all night. It's open 24 hours, so people can go there anytime they want.
This is going to be in Plymouth, Michigan.
Plymouth, Michigan. I think it's Heritage Park. If I'm wrong, someone will call us.
Heritage Park.
I don't know.
Maybe that's downtown.
I believe it is, but I'm not sure exactly. Yeah. I don't think it's right in Kellogg Park, which is right downtown.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking. Heritage Park.
But anyway, I'm sure you can find information.
Have you seen this?
I've seen this wall, yes. There are two traveling walls. Two different organizations have a traveling wall that they take around the country to different locations. So, and I know we've talked with U.S. Wings about this, if we go back down there again next year, for their welcome home for Vietnam veterans, that they're going to make every attempt, I know, to have a traveling wall down there.
Well, there must be a great demand.
And from what I understand in the article that I read is that they're busy. They're in someplace else every weekend, especially during the summer months, so they can go out there and do it.
And who funds this?
I do not know.
They must have donations while they're
there. They accept donations. It's the one that I went to was up in Brighton, I believe it is, a couple of years ago. And, you know, it's all set up, and they have honor guards, and they have people with the books pointing you to the proper panel. So if you're looking for a specific person, you can go right to that panel and find them. And I know that for those of you out there who have been to the wall in Washington, I found it almost more powerful with the backdrop of where they had set it up in Brighton than in Washington. It was really emotional. Much more. It's always more emotional than I think it is.
I wonder, how do they add names?
Usually at the bottom of the panel.
It's usually the bottom. So if that name is added, it's out of that chronological order.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think they can put it.
I don't know. I've heard it both ways. That somebody says they redo the panel, but that was a long time ago.
They don't know. I don't know. Well, we got to get into our interview because our guest is on the line, but we're going to take a break here in just a second. But I do need to talk about, unfortunately, a veteran of Afghanistan that came home. And it's Lieutenant John M. Runkle, Jr., graduated from Northwestern High School in 2002. He was killed May 26 in Afghanistan when he and five other members of the 101st Airborne Division died after insurgents attacked their unit with an improvised explosive device. And the reason I bring this up is that it was kind of a very, very moving ceremony in Western Wayne County. He had played football and sports at Northwestern High School here, and all of the eight schools that make up the Wayne County Athletic League had lined up with their banners behind his casket as it was brought in. And I thought that was really powerful, and they played the hymn, "How Great Thou Art," in the gym, and just hundreds and hundreds of people came to say goodbye. First Lieutenant John M. Runkle, Jr., on behalf of Veterans Radio and a grateful nation, welcome home, Lieutenant Runkle.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Another wild thing, and welcome back to Veterans Radio, and we're going to be talking with Major Bill Willoughby in just a second, but our crack reference and committee ran into the library as we were talking about the United States Army's birthday on June 14, 1775. Bob asked the question, when was caissons written? And the caissons go rolling along was in 1908, and it became the official theme of the Army in 1956. And also, for any of you trivia experts out there, the First Continental Congress had 56 delegates that came from 12 colonies at that time period. So it's pretty exciting that we got that. And joining me in the studio, surprise, surprise, is our host for the day, and that's Gary Lilly. And Gary's going to sit down and get in here, and we're going to be able to do his interview just as he had planned. It's amazing. So we've got your mic on.
I have it on, and the best laid plans of mice and men. A famous Scotsman said that.
Okay. Use that microphone. There you go.
Okay. How is it? Major Willoughby, welcome to Veterans Radio. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. In the last part of the first segment, Dale talked about a lieutenant who was killed in Afghanistan.
Yes, I do. I knew him. I can tell you a little bit more about him if you'd like.
Yes, please do.
He graduated from high school in 2002 and enlisted in the Army. Actually, 2003, and enlisted in the Army. People expected him to go to college, but he decided to enlist in the Army instead. He served in Korea and then went from Korea to Iraq and had served in Iraq for 10.5 months. During his time there, he had decided on a military career, became an applicant, a candidate for West Point, and was able to go through the testing and processing in Iraq to earn an active duty soldier nomination and ultimately appointment to West Point. He came back in May of 2005, and I met him at that time. We have a parents club, and every May we have a what's called almost a plebe picnic event, in early June. For the young people who are entering with the next class. And so I was honored to introduce him and his parents to the Parents Club, which is a support group, information group, in the community in Northeast Ohio. and he did very well at West Point. He was in the top 10% of his class. He chose infantry in graduation, went to Ranger School, successful at Ranger School, and then went to his unit, 101st Airborne, out of Fort Campbell, and on to Iraq. So he basically had decided that the military was going to be his career. He was quiet, a very determined person. And when he was at West Point, he was a member of the Honor Committee, which typically goes to, if you will, the most respected and trusted cadets to be able to handle those ethical issues if there are suspected breaches and so forth. It's kind of like being a judge in civil society. So that's the kind of person he was, and losing him is a great loss to the nation.
And you attended his funeral, did you not?
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that.
It was a marvelous turnout of the community. General officer, Dave Mann, who is the commanding general of the recruiting command, attended quite a number of funerals, because any time a soldier dies in Iraq or Afghanistan, a general attends and officiates, if he's a part of the official party, at the funeral.
I didn't know that. That's impressive.
Yes. One of my other duties is a civilian aide to the Secretary of the Army, and I attend as many of those as I can. It's not mandatory for me, but I try to. And in every one of those that I've attended, and it's, over the last, 8 or 9 years, it's been probably 18 to 20, unfortunately. A general officer has been assigned to attend and participate in the funeral ceremony.
Is that any soldier or officers?
It's any soldier.
Oh, wow. That is incredible. I didn't realize that. Were you a speaker at his funeral?
No. No, okay. The speakers at his funeral were family.
Okay. And it was really impressive to learn that you attended that funeral for such a fine young man. And I'm glad to hear that what you're saying is that you attend a number of them. What is your connection still with West Point?
I'm the admissions coordinator for the state of Ohio.
Okay. So you're more or less vet the applicants? Is that what?
Yes.
Okay.
But my role has been as the coordinator for Northeast Ohio. We've been pretty successful, and I've got a really great group of combination of graduates and parents who assist candidates through the admissions process, which is not an easy process.
And, I've heard that.
And we also are required to conduct an interview and put eyeballs on them as a matter of quality control. Find out why they're motivated. We want to make sure that the candidate wants to go and not his parents, for instance.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have even thought about that angle.
Sometimes we have to tell the parents that they're too old.
You can't go. You can't go.
Okay. You also, we're going to get into your own personal story, which is very, very, it's so typical of our dedicated military. And I hate to say that you're typical, but, I think we're all typical from that standpoint.
Right.
It's, I think, the best that America has to offer. Say that sounds self-serving, but I truly believe it. You also recognize some high school graduates that had recruited. Could you tell us about that? You and General Wagner.
Oh, yes. First of all, the young people who get college scholarships, who get appointments to our service academies and other honors get recognized at high school graduations and awards assemblies and the like. And the young people who enlist in the armed forces really do not get sufficient recognition for their standing up and putting on the uniform of our U.S. Armed Forces, and many of whom will go on to serve in dangerous circumstances. And basically, serving the nation in uniform is a dangerous occupation, no matter what service you join.
I tell kids that. I tell other people, even in peacetime, the military is a dangerous occupation. I try not to say it to parents.
Well, I think when we do the admissions briefings, we have several meetings a year for admissions. I disclose that every time. I say that we have wonderful education. There's testimony that West Point, for instance, and the Naval Academy are the two premier liberal arts colleges in the United States, recognized by the U.S. News and World Report. All of that's wonderful, but let's recognize the fact, and that is that it is a dangerous occupation.
And any time we meet a vet, being Vietnam vets, if they served during the Vietnam War, they almost apologetically say, "I didn't serve in Vietnam," or any other time, "I didn't serve in a war." And I tell them, that means you were doing a pretty good job, weren't you? You kept our country safe.
Well, let me give you another example. And basically, veterans, whatever it is they did what Uncle Sam asked them to do. And it's interesting. I have my youngest son's father-in-law was an All-America hockey player. He graduated from Yale. He got drafted. And they assigned him, during the Vietnam War, they assigned him to the U.S. Olympic hockey team. And he was somewhat, they expressed to me, because obviously I had two combat tours in Vietnam, that he didn't feel like he'd quite served. I said, that's not true. You did what they asked you to do. If they'd asked you to go to Vietnam, you'd have gone to Vietnam. But you served the nation on the U.S. Olympic hockey team, and that's a great service too.
It really is. And I was, a young man, he's no longer young, that I knew was in the U.S. Olympic ski team. So while he was in the military,
right.
So you know, those who do whatever, they also serve.
Right.
And I just want to hear people say, "I'm a Vietnam era vet." Now, I never heard of a World War II era vet. You were a World War II vet or you weren't. And
right.
It doesn't matter where you were.
That's right.
We're coming.
Well, back to community salutes.
Yep, we got a minute.
One was conducted, led by Dr. Ken Hartman in southern New Jersey for a small number. It was about 30 young people enlisting in the armed forces. He recognized that fact that I just expressed, that people were not recognized for enlisting in our armed forces, even though many of them would serve in dangerous circumstances. And so he set this recognition up through privately procured funds, and really he's a very energetic individual. And so last year he expanded from southern New Jersey to Pittsburgh. This year we conducted these ceremonies for young people in Brooklyn, New York, southern New Jersey, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
We're coming right on the break, and there's a message to all of you other communities that recognize these young people. We'll be back right after this.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant Jack Jacobs, although seriously wounded, made repeated trips across an open rice paddy, evacuating wounded and their weapons. Details after this.
As a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, joining IAVA.org really helps in the transition home. It's a network of OIF and OEF vets like me who've got your back here, just like we did over there. That means when you need help navigating the GI Bill, we've got your back. And when you're dealing with the transition home, we've got your back. Or when you just want someone to share stories with, we've got your back. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org. We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
Jacob served as an assistant battalion advisor in Kien Phong Province, Republic of Vietnam. The battalion was advancing when it came under intense heavy machine gun and mortar fire. Jacobs called for and directed airstrikes on the enemy positions. Due to the intensity of the enemy fire and heavy casualties to the command group, including the company commander, the attack stopped and the friendly troops became disorganized. Wounded by mortar fragments, Jacobs assumed command of the company, ordered a withdrawal from the exposed position, and established a defensive perimeter. Despite heavy bleeding from head wounds that impaired his vision, Jacobs returned under intense fire to evacuate a seriously wounded advisor to safety, where he administered life-saving first aid. He then returned through heavy automatic weapons fire to evacuate the wounded company commander. Jacobs made repeated trips across the fire-swept open rice paddies, evacuating wounded and their weapons. On three separate occasions, Jacobs drove off Viet Cong squads who were searching for Allied wounded and weapons, single-handedly killing three and wounding several others. His actions saved the lives of a U.S. advisor and 13 Allied soldiers.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Well, the loneliest number, and there are times in the military that you feel like you're the loneliest number. We're talking to Major Bill Willoughby, and we've talked so far about the things he does still serving for the U.S. military and for our country. Major, you also served in Vietnam. Let's talk about you for the rest of the program.
Well, okay. I like to talk about our community salutes, but
I know you. That's your dedication.
I'll do what I'm told. Just quickly, we put together a really great team, and we started work on this particular project back in October. It was actually in August of 10, with a date of the 12th of May. And we didn't know anything about how to do this except a little some guidance from Dr. Hartman. But when we put it on, we had to raise funds. We had to set up a 501c3 public charity. We had to get all of the armed forces aligned and the details of all of the young people. And we had 350 young people enlist in the Cleveland area in the various armed forces. We were able to get about 200 of them together. The key person who organized, if you will, the inside of all of this is General Bob Wagner, an energetic and thorough and detail-oriented person. It was a difficult task because each of the armed forces recruiting, different armed forces have different command structures and chains of communication. But he managed to work his way through all of this and get everybody together, which I thought was an amazing task. He's a special force. He was the commander of all of our special forces up until a year and a half ago when he retired as a three-star.
We interviewed him twice on Veterans Radio. The first time was we juggled the follow-up program, or the one that was scheduled, because it was immediately after Osama bin Laden was killed, and
right.
We wanted to find out some of the story behind the story on how that happened, because it, you know, to the average, to the uninitiated, uninformed, it just sounds like some guys jumped on a helicopter and went in there. Yes, that's why we had him on, and then we had him back for the life and times of him, because he was such a fascinating guy. Jumped in 15
really
different.
Really, a great teammate, and everybody who worked on the committee, and we had about 20 people on our committee, and everybody said, we can see why he rose to such rank in the military as a three-star, why he is a general officer.
And he's also a very friendly guy to talk to. And you would never know that he had been a general when you talk to him. He's just he doesn't come across as I was a general. He was
that's right
a regular guy. And
that's
so
right.
Regular guys. Let's talk about Major Willoughby.
Okay.
you graduated from West Point in 1960, and some things happened in between. But you ended up in Vietnam. What was your first tour in Vietnam?
Well, I have to tell you, I was an infantry company commander in Germany and had a very successful tour. And I put on my dream sheet to go back to a U.S. troop unit. I was comfortable and enjoyed the work and enjoyed our soldiers and mechanized infantry. And so I wanted to be part of a U.S. unit. And I did not, and I underline not, want to go to Special Forces. Well, 2 weeks later, my battalion executive officer comes into my office laughing his head off. I had my orders to go to Special Warfare Center and Special Forces. So, but it turned out really well. I wound up going to Vietnam. But the other thing was that I was assigned to a civil affairs psychological operations job, and I was kind of downcast about that because initially it sounded kind of wimpy. But it turned out really well because I wound up in Pleiku and Tukor and traveled around to all of the 23 Special Forces camps in Tukor, up and down the Cambodian border, which had a Special Forces A-team and had a group of Vietnamese Special Forces, Vietnamese Special Forces A-team, and 200 or 300 Montagnard soldiers in each of those camps.
Tell us what an A-team is.
An A-team is the basic operating unit of Special Forces, commanded by a captain, at that time a lieutenant. Now they have a warrant officer, an older, you know, more experienced person. And then you have an engineer, have two engineers, have two communications, have two medics, two small weapons specialists, or light weapons and heavy weapons specialists for light weapons, small arms and so forth, heavy weapons for mortars and other. So it's a 12-man team, and I think that accounts for all of the special. Oh, and an intel NCO as well, and I think I mentioned communications.
It's fascinating to me that what you just said is the Special Forces went from a captain to a lieutenant and now to a warrant officer who has a great deal of experience. That's recognizing reality that the experience is the most important thing.
That's right. And most of these people are more senior non-commissioned officers, E5, E6, E7. The team sergeant was an E8. I'm sorry, he was an E7,
okay.
Master Sergeant. So it's a more experienced group. Their job is to train indigenous soldiers and also to teach them, and in some cases, in our particular case, lead indigenous soldiers, local soldiers, on combat operations.
And even though we weren't in Laos, ended up with a client who was a Hmong tribesman who I asked him, well, you hunted for a living over there, didn't you? And I'm picturing crossbows, and he said, yeah. And I said, what'd you use for a weapon? And he said, M16, full automatic. Where did you get that? He says, from the Americans.
Sure.
But
they were wonderful.
I said, but we weren't there. And we laughed again.
Yes. The Montagnards were Aboriginal people who, over hundreds and hundreds of years, were pushed up into the mountains, higher elevations in Vietnam, as the Asian ethnic people pushed south out of China. And they actually have similarities in the language between the Vietnamese Montagnards and the Philippine population, Tagalog. And they were so they're different. They're a different stock than the Vietnamese.
Well, that's interesting. They're separated by an ocean.
That's right. I thought that was extremely interesting when, you know, we had Philippine mechanics who could speak some of the Montagnard languages.
That's amazing. So psychologically, as a psychological officer, what did you do when you did visit these camps?
Well, what my job was to assess issues with the populace, both civil affairs and psychological operations, and in the particular case with the Montagnards, providing medical care was a big factor in establishing loyalty with the Montagnard population. So what we wanted to do is to get the Montagnard population on our side and basically separate them from the Viet Cong. And the, of course, the Viet Cong were recruiting heavily in that area as well. The civil affairs part was to work with them on such simple things as public health, sanitation, and so forth. We would go into a search and clear in a Montagnard village and find children dying of dysentery. And it just tore me up. I had a wife and children at home, and I'd see my kids and these little Montagnard kids who needed very, very basic public health, and clean water and the like.
The Montagnards are very impressive people. They are very family-oriented, and on top of family-oriented, they're community-oriented.
Yes.
And they fought for the French, but as you said, the Viet Cong were recruiting them, and there were Montagnards that fought against us.
That's right.
Didn't you do a second tour in Vietnam?
Well, my first tour, I finished, the first half of my tour was the civil affairs psychological operations, and the second half was as an A-team leader at Camp Play Me.
Oh, so you had two jobs.
I had two jobs, a split tour.
What was
That was the Play Me camp was on the near the Cambodian border and included the Yadrang Valley battlefield.
And that was the Yadrang Valley is We Were Soldiers Once and Young was the book.
That's
and
right.
We Were Soldiers Once was the movie. And
yeah.
That was a very, very tough place to be. You were right on the border of Cambodia, and the bad guys could come in through the mountains and right across the border there. And it was virtually impossible to plug the gaps.
Our job was to screen that area, maintain a presence in that area, and identify any big incursions, which we did. And then we had good contact with a Colonel Hal Moore, who moved his brigade out to our camp and used it as a jumping-off point for a follow-up in February 1966.
That was before the Yadrang. Hal Moore was the person whose role Mel Gibson played in the movie.
Yes, the Yadrang Valley battle was in November 1965.
I'm sorry. I was thinking it was right.
He was a lieutenant colonel at that time. He was promoted to full colonel, became the brigade commander of the 3rd Brigade of the 1st Cav Division, and when we had identified a major incursion across the Cambodian border into our area of operation, the 3rd Brigade.
I'm going to have to cut off right there. We'll be right back.
Veterans, need help with your VA benefit claim? Then call Legal Help for Veterans right now at 800-693-4800. To ensure the best possible chance for success, our attorneys at Legal Help for Veterans are devoted to VA claim appeals, and they will forcefully present your particular case. So make that call today to Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800 for your no-charge consultation.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. Our guest today is Major Bill Willoughby, retired, and you were medically retired. Bill, tell us about that.
Well, I came back from my first tour in Special Forces, luckily without a scratch, I considered, and others as well, a successful tour. Came back to the captain's course at Fort Benning, and then stayed at Fort Benning to be a tactics instructor in counter-guerrilla operations in the Brigade and Battalion Operations Department. And my boss from first tour called me up. He'd been promoted to full colonel and was going to be the commanding officer of the 3rd Brigade of the 1st Infantry Division, and he asked me to join him. I accepted and wound up back in Vietnam in September 1968. I was assigned as an operations officer with the 1st Infantry Division, 2nd Battalion, 2nd Infantry, which was mechanized, and it took me back to my mechanized roots in Germany. We were somewhat of a fire brigade, and we wound up initially protecting Rome plow operations, setting up fire bases, and then with bulldozers clearing land where the North Vietnamese had used areas for cover and concealment and base areas. So we did that, and then were assigned under the 1st Cavalry Division up on the Cambodian border at a place familiar named Loc Ninh. And
Dale's nodding his head. Were you there, Dale?
I've been there. Yeah.
Okay, lots of people have been there. That's right.
He was a helicopter pilot, and he would fly Special Forces guys around.
Okay.
Sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. And they had identified an incursion across the Cambodian border sometime in late November. And so they terminated our particular role, or I think we completed what they wanted us to do, and they moved us from Lai Ke to Loc Ninh and up in the Michelin rubber plantation. The rubber plantation had rows and rows of rubber trees all in a line, which both gave good fields of fire, and also which had ground that was easily fortified. So we, with our mechanized capability, we had an advantage because the armored personnel carriers, the M113s, were pretty much impervious to small arms fire. And so they made good platforms from which to fight and from which to carry soldiers safely to and from a combat site. And so they had located, we had one company move up there, and they immediately located a dug-in North Vietnamese unit, at least company size, and had a very successful battle. And then the battalion moved in the next day with an additional company and a reconnaissance platoon, which had fewer soldiers but had more firepower. And so we bellied up to this particular unit and proceeded to reduce the dug-in bunkers that they had. It turns out it was a North Vietnamese battalion, and we had basically a day-long fight. It was a pretty long day. We had airstrikes of various sizes, 250-pound bombs. We had artillery. We had our own 4.2 mortars. It was we reduced the reduced that particular dug-in battalion. With a very, very significant casualties for them, and they basically, I think, was destroyed as a combat unit.
And where did what were you doing, and how did you get hit?
Well, I was in an armored personnel carrier, and I was coordinating the airstrikes and artillery, and I was right behind the line of armored personnel carriers that were working their way through the dug-in bunkers and basically reducing them with the 50 caliber machine guns that are mounted on each of the armored personnel carriers.
A formidable weapon that's still popular today in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, MADUS.
And how were you, what happened to you personally?
Well, I was busy paying attention to my activities, and that is making sure that if we had airstrikes coming in that we weren't shooting artillery at the same time. I didn't want to shoot down one of our own jets and that sort of thing. So it all had to be coordinated, and we had to move the fires ahead of us up the hill where the North Vietnamese were all dug in. So I had stayed in one lane too long, I think, and I took a gunshot wound through my left forearm and left elbow. And did have a severed artery, and I had a young man who had just joined the unit that I had sort of added to our group at the last minute. I had asked him to tie off my arm, and then I turned my duties over to the artillery forward observer who was with me, who was in another track, I'm sorry. And then the people who were with me, what we had to do was to get back to the battalion headquarters area, where they had cut down a number of trees so they could get helicopters in.
And you got medevaced out, dust off.
Yeah, right.
How long did it take to recover? We're going to be signing off in a minute, but how long did it take for you to recover?
About 6 months.
Do you still have use of your arm?
Yes, I do.
Any idea what kind of a round hit you?
I think it was an AK-47.
Oh, okay.
It's a little hard to tell. I have no idea. They do tumble, and they do a lot of damage. So
yes, I mistakenly put on the flyer that it was a 50 caliber, and I thought, man, this guy's tough. But there's no way that you could get hit by a 50 in the arm and keep it. When I heard you talking earlier, a few weeks ago, about 50s, you were talking about the ones on our tracks.
Yes.
Well, Major, thank you for being on Veterans Radio. Is there, in about a half a minute, is there anything that you would like to say that I have not asked?
No, that's a good question. I would say that serving a nation in uniform is a great honor, and I continue to serve because I believe in this country, particularly because I want to make sure in Ohio we don't have a military footprint, and I want Ohio to be well represented in our armed forces. The armed forces of the nation should be representative and have close contact and support of the populace. That is what the Army wants to accomplish long term.
Thank you very much, Major Willoughby, and with that, I will be signing off with you. And Dale, what do you have coming up with the next program?
Well, next week on Veterans Radio, we're going to be talking to some of the liberators of the concentration camps in Germany. And specifically, we're going to be talking to some of the children of the liberators and how that whole thing affected them. The book that we're going to be, the author we're talking to wrote a book called Gated Grief, and her name is Lila Levinson. And it's just amazing. I did not know the details of these concentrations. There were hundreds and hundreds of them all throughout Germany and Poland, much more than I think any of us anticipated. So I'm excited to have her on, and I want everybody to come in next week to do that.
Until then, you are dismissed.
Not all views and opinions expressed on Veterans Radio reflect the views of Veterans Radio or your local station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.
Veterans, need help with your VA benefit claim? Then call Legal Help for Veterans right now at 800-693-4800. To ensure the best possible chance for success, our attorneys at Legal Help for Veterans are devoted to VA claim appeals, and they will forcefully present your particular case. So make that call today to Legal Help for Veterans at 800-693-4800 for your no-charge consultation.